Devin and Morgana have been celebrating midlife love by getting married 100 times in 100 countries. They believe grown-up love gets better and more fun, especially for women. Everyone's smarter, wiser. Men are more relationship ready. And if they're not, it's obvious. Forget anything you were told about being too old or too late for love and adventure. Instead, get fresh new tips on dating, relating, and travel to exotic destinations. And best of all, call in for personal guidance, creating crazy, sexy midlife love in your life.
And we are back. Greetings from Smoky, California. I am your co-host, Morgana Ray, and I'm here with my husband, Devin.
Who is also a co-host. And as we are both swimming through the fog and the haze and the smoke and the heaviness. But we are here to have a lively show because crazy, sexy, midlife love persists.
Yes, it does. And we're also just really grateful that for now there are no fires really close to us. But it is on everybody's mind. So it's like add, you know, COVID and then add this extra layer. There is good news, however. I just connected today with a client from almost 8 years ago, and she's getting married next week. Whoa! Because when she came to me, you know, she was much younger. She was, you know, 23 at the time. And relationship wreckage, which is normal for that age, and nothing going on professionally. And now she is the CEO of Latino Wall Street. And she is in a really healthy grown-up relationship and getting married. So not quite midlife, but it just kind of speaks to, you know, there were guys she was dating when she was younger that she thought she wanted to marry, and hallelujah that she didn't, because she's a different person now than she was then. And as we get older and we get to know ourselves better, we just make better choices. Devin had a big hand in that. You coached her on relationship for quite a while.
I did. She's a lovely person. So I know that you had a much closer relationship than I did, but I'm curious, what do you think might have been the shift for her?
Well, here's one. So she hired me specifically for her relationship with money. She was just out of college, wanted to break into entertainment. I haven't been coaching entertainment industry for quite a while, so I was actually trying to get her to hire somebody else. And she knew what she wanted, and she knew that she wanted me. And so we worked together, and we worked on her relationship with money. And she, and this is a person who grew up in poverty in Peru, worrying about clean water, worrying about her parents. She got a scholarship to go to NYU, but she still had a six-figure debt for her education, and she's sending money at home to support her parents too. And she's a young woman doing all of this. And so I coached her on her relationship with money. We had our like first deep dive intensive in-person session at the end of January 2013. And that's what changed it all. And she says she has never had money problems since, and she's actually become an extremely wealthy woman through trading options and stuff I don't even understand, and building her own business. And I think that has a lot to do with her relationship success now, because now that she's a grown-up, now that she is financially free in her own right, she is not looking for wealthy or successful men to rescue her. So she's making better choices. And I always say that it's really important for women to have that sense of their own financial security so that you can choose the best human being instead of settling for the best pocketbook. So she was able to find somebody who could meet her as an equal, who would really respect her and be kind to her, because if he's not, she could walk away. And I think that has a lot to do with the quality of the relationship. It's by choice, not by need. What do you think, Devin?
Well, I think that's all great stuff. I mean, what I remember is that, yes, she was in her 20s, very, very bright, smart person. And, you know, part of, and this is what I remember in my 20s. I mean, it's much easier now that we're grown-ups. We get to kind of look back on things at sort of like how the people we hope to date are just not like us. And so I think she needed some encouragement on how to sort of see the difference in how men think. And I think that, you know, part of what I remember about being in my 20s is that you have certain ideas of what love is supposed to be, and what you have expectations. And I think it's organic, and I think we're sort of taught that. I mean, we watch Disney movies and we have certain ideas in our head of what romance should be, what it should look like. And then when it doesn't come to us, like, you know, at the snap of a finger, all of a sudden it's kind of a drag. And so I think what I remember, again, really, really bright young lady. And so I just remember talking a lot about sort of like kind of getting her mind around different expectations of what love should look like and what it could be, you know. So I'm glad. I mean, you know, I said hello to her very briefly today, and I'm so glad that she's her romantic life is on track and going really well.
And I noticed something else, and it's exciting because I went through this when we got together, was before you, so much of my life and identity, like almost all of it was in my career, you know, making my mark, establishing my business, making money, making an impact with my clients and all that kind of stuff. And then you came along, especially after we got married, and my definition of abundance and prosperity started to shift. And my center of gravity shifted to be way, way less focused on my business and far more focused on just my happiness being with you. And it really felt like a gravitational shift. I remember turning down an amazing speaking opportunity that, like, I spent my whole career aspiring to because you and I were going on it. We had just gotten married and we were going to go on a trip. And that actually was the trip that I think led to our starting to get married 100 times in 100 countries. So I made the right call. I can get that speaking gig again if I want to. But the reason I'm bringing that up is because she, right before I reached out to her, like a few days ago, she had just launched a new program around abundance that is expanding based on her own experience too, her definition of abundance, from just how much money she's making to her quality of life, where she's living, the person she's marrying. And I love seeing that shift because it's made me so happy. You can make a lot of money and be miserable, and that's just a very fancy, high level of poverty.
Well, I mean, it's funny you should say that. I remember my own story with that. It may be a little bit different, but I was, and this is before you, I was in the film industry, and it was, at the time, it was great. I was in the union, making plenty of good dough. I had great insurance, all the kinds of things that you would want. And there were lots of little perks that were involved in being in the film industry as well. And what eventually happened is that, you know, I was probably working between 80 and 90 hours a week when it was rough. And some days there would be points where you'd be working just like legally you couldn't keep working. So somebody would come in the room and say, okay, you know, take a nap, and you drop directly down where you were standing, and then 6 or 7 hours later, I can't remember what the sort of the turnaround was, the legality of it, and you just stand up and keep working. And then there were other times where you just keep working, you know, 25, 30 hours straight.
And that explains why you can sleep anywhere at any time now.
Well, I don't know if that's why I did it, but I certainly have that capacity to just, like, somebody says sleep, I'm happy to oblige. And then there was this point, even though things were going so well financially, I just remember my daughter was tiny at the time. And there was sort of like this decision where I'm either moving on to, and I'd already been offered the job, where I'm either moving on to this sort of like the next film with the same crew, which I was already in. So it was like a great gig. I technically would have gotten a promotion and a raise, which would have been fantastic. The choice would have been, do I want to spend more time with my kid while she's little, or do I want to just keep working on this job where the money would be really nice? But, and so I remember getting the call for this great job, and I just, there was something inside of me that said, you know what? Let me give you a call back in an hour so I can think about it. And in that hour, a friend of mine called up out of the blue and said, hey, do you know anybody who can swing a hammer? Because he was remodeling his whole house and it was going to be going on. He couldn't pay much, but did I know anybody? And I don't even know why he thought of me, but I could swing a hammer. And the money was, well, not good. But it was weekends off, and it was a much more reliable schedule and a lot more flexibility. And so I ended up calling up that great job and saying, I think I'm going to pass on this.
The goal is not to make less money or make more money doing what you hate. The point of like what I teach and what I helped Gabriella with is to make money doing what you love. And that was the journey for her, was as a result, a direct result of our work together, she started getting a lot of attention and a lot of job offers in the industry that she wanted. And that got her out of debt, that got her paid really, really well, having a lot of fun. And that created the platform that she could then create her own company and do seminars and stuff like that. But I can see that for you, there was that transition period.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the truth of the matter for me, I don't even have a problem with sort of the hours had I loved it. Like when I got into the film industry, I had in the back of my mind that I would be working on, you know, Schindler's List or The Wizard of Oz, or something magical and fantastic. And, you know, you have a different idea, and then you start working on some films. And I worked on some duds. I mean, you know, people all had great intentions and warm hearts, and the people that I worked with were fantastic. And it wasn't really what I wanted. It wasn't really like, I think at some point I had to make some really juicy rationalizations in order to kind of to accept this type of work when it really wasn't the thing that was inside of me. And I think that's kind of an important distinction that, you know, I certainly wanted to be a more present dad. And I think that was incredibly important. But I also had to realize the component that I was not working on The Wizard of Oz.
Well, you and I both have that in common. And that, I think, is what you referred to us both as refugees of the entertainment industry in your first letter to me. So I think we've gotten a little off course, or maybe not. I don't know. What I did want to, there are a couple of things that I wanted to address today about really creating a safe space for love when we've got insanity around us, COVID, fires, disasters. You just lost another person you love a few days ago. You've lost a lot of people this year.
Oh yeah, no, this has been a dud. And I think this is a dud for most people. 2020 is one of those, you know, I think it's going to be one of those years of infamy to some degree.
I'm even hearing a fire engine in the background. And we're bringing this up because we know that's going on out there for so many of you too. How do you stay sane, Devin?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, you know, I personally, and I don't like going into too many specifics, but I really think at some point, and we can define this in a whole variety of ways. I think what I end up doing is I have to make a choice, and it has to be a conscious choice, because if I have a knee-jerk reaction to things, I'll go running, screaming into the streets. So that's like not a winner. So it's really the choice is, and to put it in the most simplistic way possible, is that the choice is almost always, do I want the broccoli or do I want to eat all the Snickers bars? And it's okay to have Snickers bars once in a while, but it really isn't a lifestyle choice, right?
So what does that mean?
That's what I'm getting to.
Okay.
So what ends up happening, for me, it's a really much a very spiritual choice. In other words, I'm either moving towards some sort of God, cosmic ooze, universal mind. Like, I don't care how people define that sort of that highest self consciousness thing, but I'm either choosing that. And usually when I choose that, not usually, when I choose that, I'm usually in alignment with myself. And I don't know why I keep saying usually, because that's not true. When I choose that thing, when I align myself with God, the cosmic ooze, the sort of greater common good, whatever you want to define that thing, whether it's God or not God, or it doesn't matter. But when I choose that thing, I tend to be much more right with myself, and my next course of action, even in like it's a drag, becomes a lot more obvious. Like I had a buddy of mine, Ron, die. It wasn't wholly unexpected. He had lots of physical stuff, but the last time I spoke to him, he was sort of on the mend, and that was great. We had a good conversation, and then all of a sudden I find all this stuff out on Facebook, which is just a bummer. And so my feeling at the time was like, ugh, another person, this is a drag. And I kind of wanted to sort of make the list in my head of all the downers, of all the things I could be depressed, sad, lonely, upset, right? I could either do that or I could do something useful. And so what I ended up choosing to do at that time, and even though I didn't know his wife, I wrote a personal letter to her. And I'm not saying this as an applause, but I'm saying, you know, I don't need an attaboy.
This is what helped you cope.
This is part of the thing. In other words, I didn't really know her, but I did know that if I wrote her a letter, letting her know, A, how much her husband meant to me and how kind he'd been to me. And more importantly, that he and I had talked about his wife and how much he loved her. I felt that I could be of service to her in some small way. And I also let her know, and I certainly didn't expect her to take me up on it, because I'm sure she has closer people than me to rely upon. But I wanted to let her know if there was anything that I could do, if anything needed to be moved, if she needed food, I would go get it, those kinds of things. But more importantly, that sort of the emotional component of that she was loved, and that the husband that she chose to be with for a long period of time was important and relevant, not only in my life and in her life, but other people, like common friends of ours, because he was a great guy. And so I wanted her to know that. And so even though there's frequently like, oh, this is the time I want to turn to the Snickers bars and throw like a pity party for myself, right? I want to eat all the ice cream and I want to hide out and be by myself and isolate and all those kinds of things that kind of go together. I ended up doing the opposite. So I wrote her a letter and then I called up a couple of friends who I hadn't spoken in a while just to kind of check in on them. And it's one of those things that in each case, I could feel a little bit better about the world, even though things that are happening in the world or sort of like in the forefront in my face aren't so great. So it was just a matter of like, okay, by writing her a letter and calling up friends, maybe I'm not changing the world. And I think we all kind of want to do that. I felt that was something that I could do to make sure that I'm not sort of like spiraling down the toilet bowl.
So I'm really hoping that that is helpful and comforting to somebody listening who is having a rough time, feeling depressed, maybe feeling self-destructive, because I'm hearing that like addiction relapses are way up, suicide is up. There's a lot of challenge that's up.
Right. And just a quick comment on that. As a matter of fact, 2 days ago, another friend of mine who was, in fact, an addict, great guy, great cook, super funny, charming, witty, two young children, all that stuff. And he lost his battle to addiction. At least according to his sister, which is tragic. And I'm not trying to be a downer here. It's just kind of part of what our lives are. And so when those things happen, I have that choice of like, oh, I just want to, you know, shake my fist at the world. And I want to blame, you know, God, the cosmic ooze, the universal mind. I want to blame something that the world is just wrong and bad and terrible. And that's the exact moment where I have to do some sort of other thing. So that's the way I work it out. You know what I mean? Like I do believe in prayer and meditation and being of service to others. As you know, I talk about that kind of thing all the time. And I think service to, I can't help him now. And I did try. I tried multiple times. And at some point, you can't make somebody do something. So what you can do is you get to be of service how you get to be of service. And again, when I do that, I feel better and more hopeful about myself when I sort of stay in line with my own integrity rather than, well, can't I just lock myself up in a room and eat all the Snickers bars?
If you're listening right now and you're having trouble and you just want to reach out, or if you have your own strategies for coping, we would love to hear from you. I know it sounds like we're having a conversation and you may not want to interrupt, but we would love to hear from you. Just call 888-627-6008. One of the questions I have for Devin, but I also, if you want to call in with your ideas, I want to hear from you too. What do you need from your partner?
Well, that's a great question. Sometimes it's just like, hey, let's go grab some Thai food. And then we go out and we go,
okay.
Right. And you usually say, okay. It's usually that. Like, there isn't, for me, when I get bad news, I don't necessarily need to harp on it or replay it. Sometimes I do. And so sometimes I need an ear, a sensitive ear. When this friend died a couple of days ago, I didn't come to you with it. I went to a common friend who knew him. And so we just talked about that friend, and we talked about how important it was to make sure that we receive help when we need it, right? To be open and honest about our imperfects, our imperfections. And don't get me wrong, like the crazy, sexy midlife love thing is real. And we're supposed, that's the goal. We should be doing that every day, all the time, with the recognition as we get older, certainly as we're midlife. Mm-hmm. It's just bound to happen. That's part of the whole life thing and just acknowledging our own mortality. But it's not to be dwelled on. Like, I get it. We get to mourn and we get to honor those we love by leading a good life. I believe that's a really important piece here. Because, all the, like I said, literally, I think I've had like 7 deaths in the last couple months, few months. It's not a lot. So what that means for me is that I don't think any of those people would want me just moping around feeling miserable at the plight of the world and their loss and all that other stuff. My job is like, oh, okay, let's get some Thai food. Let's have my, mourning put in order. And then try to celebrate. Earlier this year, I'm sure many of you have already heard, my brother died, which is like, was not expected. But I use that opportunity to reach out to his kids and to reach out to my sister. And we talked about lots of fond, wonderful memories, because that's the piece that I can do rather than go, oh, this is terrible.
Well, and, you know, grieving hits us uniquely and differently at different times. For me, with my father's death last year, I had so much relief that he was no longer trapped in his body and no longer suffering, that the sadness has taken a lot of time to creep in. And I don't reject it, because to me, this is what love feels. How fortunate I am to have somebody I love enough to miss and to grieve for. So it's very, very bittersweet.
Yeah, no, it is bittersweet. And I think we honor, I think, again, we honor those people, and we mourn them, and we take that time. And then at some point we have to take some kind of action, so we don't mire ourselves in places where things look hopeless and things look fruitless and things look bleak and dark, because it's easy to get into that spiral. And you know, it's just part of, I think we see it around us all the time. So mm-hmm. doing that and feeding that thing beyond sort of what I would consider to be reasonable. Like, we can have our Snickers bar, right? But I think at some point we want to make sure that we're, you know, making choices that make sense for the bigger picture too.
Well, I think what you said, we honor those we love by leading good lives, is so important, because I can't think of anyone that I've loved who would want me to lead a bad life. That's like an insult to them. You know, that they, there's, it, just think of how much it hurts you when you see someone you love hurting themselves. You don't ever want to see that. So I think that it really, yeah, you know, focus on the love. I asked a question on Facebook earlier today, like asking, just putting it out there, what have you observed in relationships during this COVID? And I got two kinds of responses. One was, relationship, what's that? And the other branch of responses was, I am more in love with my partner. Like, marriage has gotten sweeter. So when you are with the right person and the two of you are both feeding that relationship, it is sweet. It is a refuge. It goes deeper was a word that kept coming up, which is why I want this for everybody, why we have this show. You're writing a note down. What do you want to say?
Oh, you know, I actually was speaking to a client late last week, and one of the things that we discussed was just sort of this dating in COVID, and I don't know if I'm switching gears to a different topic or not.
Go ahead.
It was basically a guy that was, you know, he had looked at it as more dates than it was. And I think this has a lot to do with this COVID thing, mostly that because we've now moved into social distancing, most people are probably taking a little bit more time to kind of meet in person, just because nobody knows if it's safe yet. And moreover, people are sort of, you know, I think people are taking more time and there's more space. And so there's more likely our closeness is going to be, you know, centered around a Zoom meeting rather than sitting at a coffee shop, you know, maybe directly across from each other. And so, you know, I've spoken to a couple younger people, and what I've heard, and again, this is just, so I'm going to run with this idea, is that they're seeing a Zoom meeting as a date.
I would.
Oh, see, I wouldn't. And here's why. Here's where I was getting.
You're a guy. Wait, no, go ahead.
No, I think as a guy, I would probably see it as a date and count it as a date, right? And so what that means is, now that you finally meet each other face to face, instead of really like this is our first date hanging around to each other, in somebody's mind, it might be date number 5 or 6. And date number 5 or 6 has a whole different set of sort of like implications in our mind of what the expectation would be at that meeting. And my stance, and part of the discussion I had with this person, was that that platforms like Zoom are wonderful, and I think they're good for getting to know somebody. I think they are great for conversation because you can see the person who's across from you. I think there's lots of bonuses to that. And I think it's a great platform to ask questions about this other person. What do you think about? What do you feel about X, Y, and Z? And there's a very different dynamic than when somebody you have, even if you've spoken to for a long time on the phone, through email or whatever, it's a very different dynamic to have them, you know, three dimensions sitting next to you than it is any other sort of device.
No, you have to start back at like the beginning.
Right. No, you're starting over, because now what you're doing is you're having an experience of what that vibe is. Do you know what I mean? Like sometimes I remember talking to a woman through email. Had no intentions of really dating. She lived out of state. But at some point we had written each other for, you know, quite a while. And all of a sudden she was like, well, let's talk on the phone. And we spoke on the phone. And I may have even mentioned this before. We spoke on the phone. And after the first conversation, she was like, I had a very different, like, I expected you to sound differently. And she wrote and said, well, I don't know if I want to continue writing. Which was fine. You know, I mean, it was kind of, she lived somewhere else. I lived somewhere else. I wasn't planning on moving. She wasn't either. And so that's...
Well, I'm lucky.
Well, there you go, right? What a deal is that I didn't sound good enough? And which is okay. But the point is that with each level of communication we go through that isn't sort of live and interactive, it's not the same vibe is when you were sitting with somebody.
Well, there's so many subconscious things. There are pheromones and, you know, just little, you know, these animal things that make a lot of the decision for you. I actually like that you get to slow down and find out who the person is before you throw the hormones and the pheromones and all that irrational nonsense into the mix. You can find out. What I liked about emails is I could find out if you could spell.
If he's a what?
I could find out if you could spell.
Oh, spelling is good. I can't.
I don't know.
How did I get beyond
that? You must have used spell check.
I don't know, and I do use spell check, but I will override spell check and then still be wrong because I'm indignant.
I know.
Right, you're saying you know. So
because I edit your stuff now.
My comment to that, which has been my comment for the last 10 years, is the Great Gatsby writer, F. Scott Fitzgerald, was a notoriously bad speller and awful at grammar. So I run with that. It doesn't make me F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Right.
But
so there is not a direct inverse link between talent and spelling?
Well, I'm kind of implying maybe there is, that I could be the writer of his quality. And maybe he just didn't have
and
the
your
time.
Bad spelling is the proof.
Right. And there you go. I don't know where a comma goes. Hence, comma. I don't even know if a comma. Does a comma go after hence?
Yes.
It does. Okay, good. All right. So point one for me. Hence, comma, perhaps I could be the writer of his celebrity and quality based on my lack of grammar skills.
Okay, we'll run with that.
All right, that's what I'm doing.
There were some people on that feedback who actually were dating, and somebody was actually moving into a relationship based on that, it sounds like, where they had had 5 socially distanced in-person dates, and one person was engaged. So there was a range. Most of it was romance, relationship. What is that? Sort of like kiss? What is kiss from Star Trek? My favorite scene. We'll have to act that out later.
Okay.
And then I was happy to see that so many marriages are going deeper. Maybe just the people who are sharing on Facebook. Because maybe if marriages are falling apart, they don't want to share that on a public thread in Facebook. Because what I'm noticing is whatever is there, it's like COVID is just magnifying it. A friend of mine who was married 15 years, in the last couple of months, his marriage dissolved. And there were signs over the last year of tension before the pandemic hit. And I think that it just reveals and magnifies what's already there, just exaggerates what's already there, maybe speeds up the process and of like going closer or going or parting.
Well, my take is always that if you've picked somebody, and unless you have a really stellar reason, i.e. cheating, violence, some other kind of despicableness, I think that there's probably enough there for it to be worth figuring it out.
Yeah, I
know you disagree.
No, I don't disagree at all. I'm the romantic. I always want a happy ending. I don't know why she wanted out of the marriage. I don't know the details.
Oh, well, I'm not.
With him, and I just know that from his perspective, she didn't want to be married anymore. So
right.
I don't know what led to it.
I'm certainly not claiming that I have a clue either. I guess what I'm saying is that I think people have the ability to reignite romance. And mm-hmm. I think it's a fundamental thing that, in other words, I also believe that it's certainly possible that people run their course together. But I also think frequently, with many of the people that I speak to, marriages can be saved. But that also means that both parties have to sort of like reframe what they think the problems are and start working towards solutions
need to have some desire for it to work out.
Because absolutely.
Once a person is checked out, you can't save it with only one person.
Oh, well, that's true. But even if both people are checked out, but if they both have a sincere desire to allow to, in other words, for them to
check
start
out
moving.
Is like, I'm over, done. That's
oh, well, no, yeah. Well, I guess I'm using checked out in a different way. I'm just like somebody's kind of ambivalent.
No. For me, like when somebody has decided it's over, then it is. You can't work with just one person.
Well, I have spoken primarily to women who are like, it's over, I'm running away, I'm packing my bags, who didn't.
Well, because if they were still talking about it and talking about it to you, part of them still wanted to stay.
Yeah,
and that's
no, I think that's, again,
really,
we're talking about.
If two people have that, I think that there's always potential for it to work out.
Right. And that's the part that I'm agreeing with. That also goes to say that we are usually dealing with simple problems, but we as humans are exceptionally complex.
Yeah.
All right. Well, run with that. You disagree?
I don't know. If I haven't really thought about it.
All right.
So I don't know.
Well, then we can talk about that another time.
Yeah, you're just getting a blank from me.
Right. So no, that's
and
okay.
And dead air, which is great for radio.
Right. No, people enjoy that on the radio. Geez, I hope there was more silence. It's interrupting my meditational practice on our talk radio show.
Right.
No, I made a note.
Okay. So I think I understand what that note is. I was just about to go into this. I had another interesting interaction with a friend online. somebody who we have a lot in common, another woman, I think we just have energetically and some of the stuff in our, either our makeup or our upbringing or life experiences, I feel like we have some stuff in common, including being two women who have always been searching for a relationship. So when she posted yesterday about she's always been searching for a relationship and she's been a serial monogamist forever and now she thinks she needs to take a break from that, I related to that because, you know, I was... The first great love of my life was Brian Patterson, who I chased under the piano on his fifth birthday, and he was the older man. And at some point for me, the wanting and the disappointment of the heartbreak after heartbreak after heartbreak was just so painful. And the act of dating and, put, you know, all the work of putting on the pretty and meeting and maybe he would show up and maybe he wouldn't on a first date. It was just too much. And I decided that was it. And I pulled the plug, took down all of my dating profiles and just stopped and read a lot of romance novels for years. I was like consuming three or four a week. I can tell you everything about traveling Scottish lairds and romantic vampires and lots of nonsense. And what happened, and I think I did this for maybe 4 years, maybe longer, I can't remember, but eventually the pain quieted, which was a huge relief. And my business grew and you know, I had a full life with my friends and I was able to just kind of take a break from this lifelong desire to have a life partner, a romantic life partner. And it also felt like something went to sleep. I took a lot of classes on relationships. I became friends with a lot of dating coaches in LA. I sort of was inducted into their into the clique of all the popular kid dating coaches. I would help them with their relationship with money and they would like give me advice on dating, which I sorely needed. And when I did come back to dating again, I came back differently, much less needy, much less attached to results, did not take first dates personally. And it was like I had this x-ray vision and I could look at somebody honestly and go, you're wonderful. And it's not going to work out with us. And I would, you know, whether I said that verbally or said it loudly in my mind, I could see an expiration date. Like most of them were one date. And I could see this was going nowhere. You're lovely and you'll make somebody else very, very happy. And by the way, I recommend this. I recommend this so strongly. If you're going to pick one person to spend the rest of your life with, be picky. Don't try to lie. My thing was I would lie to myself and I would pretend not to see what was smack in front of my face. The drug abuse or the anger issues or the racism or whatever. The great thing about dating men is men tend to not be subtle and they let you know exactly who you are if you ask and you listen and you observe.
Let them know who they are.
Right. They will let me know who they are.
Right.
That's what I meant to say. I don't know what I said. They will let me know who they are if I ask and listen. And believe them. I'm not talking about con artists, but I find the men that I dated were really not, they would, whether intentionally or not, they would let me know who they were. And I could see why it wasn't going to work out. And it wasn't that they weren't good enough. It was just obviously not a good match. And it became so much easier where I could just enjoy meeting somebody and spending some time with somebody without it having to mean anything more than that. And then once in a while, there'd be somebody that I'd like and be attracted to, and that would last 3 months. Somehow, something, no matter what, and I knew it was temporary going in, always, But it was fun, so let's give it a try. And without fail, something would happen at the 3-month mark to make sure that we were no more at 3 months. And to me, it was like the hand of God was just like in stepping in and making sure that I was single for when my person showed up. And Devin, well, there was something before I met Devin. I was really, really discouraged at some point in 2012. I had really crushed hard on a guy in 2011, and then, you know, 3 months hit and he was gone. I had broken up with him, but I was still like, oh, but I liked him because I'm a grown up. And I was just so discouraged being 45 and single. And there was such a parallel to what was going on with my love life and what I taught daily about relationship with money, where I was doing everything I was supposed to do, everything every coach told me to do with my profiles and the dating and working on myself. And it still wasn't working. I must be protecting myself from something. And by the way, I believe this because it has been so true in my life over and over again in different areas. And I see it with other human beings all the time. When you are doing everything right and you still aren't getting a result, maybe you are protecting yourself from what you want. And I got curious and I was like, why would I protect myself from love? And I dug. I really dug into this, and I looked at, I have a violent, alcoholic, bipolar, borderline personality, narcissist mom, to start with, my first experience of love, who would beat me up and tell me what a horrible monster I am. So that was a big piece. Other experiences with friends, with family, with boyfriends and disappointments and heartaches over a lifetime. I built just like almost like a court case of how love hurt me when my stepfather, who I had lived with my whole life and took my first steps to when I was 17, he told me he didn't want to be my father anymore. That went in there. Doesn't seem like it has to do with romantic love, but we're looking at why am I protecting myself from love? And by the time I was like through with like the big painful pieces, it felt like love was a monster that wanted to kill me. That was throwing one painful rejection, betrayal, heartache, surprise, twist, whatever, after another, so that I would just give up on my desire to live. And I really believed that my lifetime relationship with love up till that time was dangerous for me because it was so painful and so abusive and had multiple times in my life made me want to die. So I can make a case that love was trying to kill me. So I made a decision that I gave it an entity. I gave it a personhood. I made it my love monster. It was enormous. And I decided only one of us can survive. And it wasn't going to be the monster. And so in my mind's eye, I destroyed, obliterated, annihilated, rejected that experience of love from my whole life. That was my love monster. And that created space for a new relationship with love that was safe. And a month later, Devin contacted me.
And so that is, and yes, I guess I did contact you. But what I was going to say is when I was talking about the Snickers bars versus broccoli, that's it. In other words, there was this reaction that you had. Correct me if I'm wrong, there was a reaction that you were having about, hey, I have all this good reason to not be in a relationship based on past experience with family and with boys and all that other stuff, right? And then you made a conscious decision that overrode. Is that even a word?
Yes.
Okay. See, the grammar thing keeps popping up. So overrode the justification, right? The justified anger, the justified upset to say, okay, I'm just going to keep, I'm reinventing, reframing my understanding of what relationships are so I can have a good one.
Yeah.
Is that about right?
Yeah. Because I've always, you don't have to be built this way, but I simply am. I'm built for relationship. I'm built for partnership. I feel more fully myself with a witness and a partner and somebody that I can love. And I've just been looking for a place. And at the same time, I wasn't willing to park my love in the wrong place permanently, which is why I didn't get married before you. Because there was something maybe about integrity or just self-preservation that I just knew that I couldn't unless it was right. And you were the first person to show up who didn't have an expiration date.
Well, I'm lucky for me. But for those who are listening, what would you suggest that they do to sort of reimagine their own understanding of love, even if they have a bad history of it?
It's interesting that you showed up at the time that you did. I wonder if it would have happened earlier if I was ready earlier. I don't know. What I would encourage you to do is, and you can listen to the recording of this episode when it's posted at bbsradio.com/crazysexymidlifelove or in iTunes, is I really laid out the process, which is go through your life and every instance that you can excavate where love hurt you, where the person who was supposed to love you abused you or hurt you or lied to you or betrayed you or rejected you. Like every time your tender little heart was wounded. This is an alchemical process. Alchemy is the process of transmuting lead, as in lead in human experience, into spiritual gold. This is the process I take people through with money, and then they make millions of dollars. It's the same thing with love, and even with the money process. I think money issues are all substitute for love issues. But it goes for me, it went a little farther when I was really taking the area of life that was the big problem area head on and naming it, this is my love monster that's trying to kill me. So I would get, you know, take off your law of attraction hat for a moment. What you really want to do is more like a slingshot. You want to go into, really go deep into the problem to create the tension and the pull, like a slingshot, that creates the momentum to go into the other, go where you want to be. So
what is it? Because I know that there's a lot of people who know your work.
Yeah.
But when you say go into the problem, what does that look like for people who aren't?
Everything, every time love has hurt you. If you really want to go into my process and then just replace the word money with love, every time I walk you through that process over and over again for free with videos and audios available on my website at morganaray.com. And the idea is you start by going really uncovering the depth of the problem, the hurt, and you want to make it as big as possible because that creates like the energy and the portal to create a monster. I find personifying a problem makes it much more manageable to get rid of so that then you can create a new relationship with money or love or health or whatever is your life challenge. I know we're coming to the end of our time together, and I just opened a ginormous area of content that we're having to wrap up really quickly. Next week, we have an amazing guest, longtime friend of Devin, Rebecca. Derby Dolls.
Yeah, she's the founder of the Derby Dolls and one of the more dynamic rock and roll, kick butt, superwoman.
Married her guy that she met online, married him 2 months later, and they're still super happy together. So this is really going to bring in the crazy and the sexy into Midlife Love next week, 5 p.m. Wednesday. Yeah, and head over to crazysexymidlifelove.com to see the 3-minute trailer of our first 11 weddings. It's funny. Get ideas for your own weddings. And join our community. Download Devin's free ebook, Women Are Smarter Than Men.
That's exactly true.
And that's the name of the ebook.
And I'll tell you why. And then you can use it for ammunition against...
Against you.
That's right.
And we will see you again in a week. Mwah! Have a crazy, sexy, midlife loving time.
Thank you for listening to Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. Please sign up to join our free love family at crazysexymidlifelove.com. To get alerts to live shows, call in and ask questions, or just listen in. And ladies, don't forget to download Devin's free ebook, Women Are Smarter Than Men and Other Secrets Marriage-Minded Women Need to Know. Also available at crazysexymidlifelove.com.